You're listening to an ESA podcast brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. ESA, promoting the science of ecology.
I'm Terrence Houston, and this is The Ecologist Goes to Washington, a podcast program by the Ecological Society of America, where we interview scientists involved with public policy. Today, I'm interviewing Sydney Blankers with the University of Illinois at Chicago. Sydney is one of this year's Graduate Student Policy Award winners. What led you to pursue a master's in urban and environmental planning?
I have been interested in the life sciences and in ecology and the environment specifically since I was a kid. I have a passion for wildlife and for really curbing the negative impacts that humans often have on the natural world. So as an undergrad, I studied natural resources and biology at Cornell University. There, I received a thorough scientific training, which I am eternally grateful for. And I think one of the most important things I learned was to thoughtfully and critically question the world around me. So towards the end of my undergrad schooling, I began to sort of question whether environmental science and natural resource management were the areas of research where I personally could make the most impact. I started gravitating toward the interface between humans and nature. I actually believe there really is no real distinction between humans and nature, but the fact that there is a substantial divide for many people suggested to me a gap that needed to be filled if nature were to stop suffering at the hands of humans.
From your perspective, how do urban communities benefit from incorporating ecological research into their city planning and implementing environmentally friendly practices?
I think there are many ways. A specific example might be research on bee foraging and pollination, and that research then is going towards influencing the scope of an urban garden policy so that the gardens benefit both humans and bees, just as a potential example. Another example I have is from research I participated in while in grad school. I was lucky enough to participate in an NSF-funded project that involved looking at the movement of resources within and between cities as if they were part of an urban metabolism. There are many resources in a city: water, material goods, people, money, pollution. Much of these data are things that urban planners track and already pay attention to. And in fact, much of urban planning is trying to understand how such pieces fit together in a community, how they will change over time, and how, if necessary, they can be altered to bring about the most benefit. So I think approaching this question in terms of systems and using ecological systems as models to start with can really benefit the practice of urban planning. And I also think it's a mutual gain. After all, an urban system is a substantial player in our Earth's global ecology as well.
When you discuss your master's thesis on urban and natural interconnectedness, you use the term biomimicry. What is biomimicry?
Yeah, so biomimicry means mimicking life. The organization Biomimicry 3.8 and its founder, Janine Benyus, have done an excellent job of talking about biomimicry and its uses. One way to think of it is looking to nature as mentor, model, and measure for solutions to some of our human-constructed problems. After all, evolution has been coming up with ingenious ways to solve life's problems for billions of years. So the idea is, you know, why should we start from scratch? And here's one of my favorite examples of biomimicry today. The structure of shark scales is such that bacteria have a difficult time colonizing it, simply just because of its structure. Materials scientists have replicated this structure to create hospital surfaces that are then less susceptible to bacterial growth. And this increases patient and worker health while also slowing down bacterial resistance to overused antibacterials. So it's looking at how nature has solved these problems and integrating those solutions into our environments.
During your meetings with policymakers on Capitol Hill, did you find there were particular aspects of what you said that seemed to resonate and help convey the importance of federally funded research?
Yes, I actually learned at the orientation that another University of Illinois campus, that at Urbana-Champaign, actually receives the most NSF funding of any other recipient, measured both in terms of number of grants as well as total dollars received. And this was a huge selling point for the congressional staff members I talked with. They were excited to hear that one of their state's top research institutions was so supported by NSF. Talking about how anchor institutions like universities, which are important economic drivers of many communities, talking about how those anchor institutions are fueled by basic research, that definitely got their attention. And I think my perspective on how NSF-funded research can actually result in benefits to urban centers, where there are lots of constituents and voters, also helped show the impact this research has on their communities.
How did your overall experience change your perspective of Congress and your concept of policy engagement in general?
It was helpful to be reminded just how much is happening on the Hill at any one time, and to learn just how much the staffers do to support one congressperson. Of course, no congressperson can be an expert on all the issues, but I didn't realize, perhaps naively, that they rely so much on their staffers to decide how to vote on issues or what their constituents really want and care about. On the other hand, I was also reminded just how much variation there is in terms of interest and knowledge about constituent issues. We were lucky to talk directly with a few congressmen, one of which was extremely engaged in our research and actively pushed us to explain our positions and justify our work. I absolutely loved this. I thought it was perfect that a congressman was being critical of and questioning a group of scientists whose job it is to be critical and to question things. That really was one of the highlights of the visit for me, knowing that there are some critical thinkers on Capitol Hill who are applying science, or at least thoughtfulness, to our federal political process.
Finally, what advice would you give to other young scientists seeking to engage in public policy?
I think if people come into public policy thinking that it is going to be rational and therefore their logical way of thinking is going to be easily applicable and helpful, they might find themselves mistaken. I don't think it is about scientific rationality at all, really, but that's also the challenge. It's a tough job to try to cut through the egos and the money, even just a little bit, and identify the leverage points that will cause change. But that's our task, and I think it's a really exciting endeavor, and I am really grateful that ESA is willing and able to help engage scientists in that process. It's really interesting to me, too, that some things that seem like they should make perfect sense, like long-term strategies and things like that, sometimes get overshadowed with some of the short-term goals that policymakers sometimes have. So, you know, it's really important to take into account that context when trying to make an argument for something that may have a long-term time horizon. The arguments that one might make for that aren't necessarily the same for a policymaker that's thinking in more of a short-term goal. So it's kind of a challenge for us to put it in their perspective, but I think it's a great exercise because then we can make our science much more widely appreciated by a larger audience, and I think it's a really great skill to have and a wonderful opportunity to practice that skill.
And that was Sydney Blankers with the University of Illinois at Chicago. Thanks so much for listening, and please join us next time when The Ecologist Goes to Washington.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Ecological Society of America. Music was provided by Dr. Nicholas Catelli. For a link to Dr. Catelli's homepage, more information about ESA, or additional podcasts, please visit www.esa.org. Thanks for listening.